Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hello, I'm Susan Yolanta. I'm your host for today. I'm really excited to be speaking on the phone with Michael Waldman, author of The Fall to Freedom. How do you build a life right out of high school? Actually, right out of rehab. This is exactly what readers will explore as they follow Bix Freeman's attempt to recapture his glorious high school days fresh out of rehab, as he vowed to get rich before his high school friends finished college. But before we start, let's learn a little bit more about Michael. Michael grew up in West Los Angeles, California, and much like his novel's main character, he went to rehab after high school. But his mistakes as a young man didn't stop him, as he reached the goals he set for himself. Michael Waldman's work has been published in several publications such as BCN Week, We Feel Pretty, Zion Columbia, and Feathertail, and The Fall to Freedom is his debut novel. He currently lives in Los Angeles. For more information on Michael and his book, visit www.thefalltofreedom.com. Hi, Michael. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Susan?
Pretty good. Thank you so much for being with us. I found your book, The Fall to Freedom, actually very interesting, and so I'm really happy to be the one interviewing you for Inside Scoop Live. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself before we start, because you are certainly one of my youngest authors, and I'm really impressed by that, by the way. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I hear a lot about writers or authors, you know, they've always been, you know, reading since they were very young, and they've always sort of, I guess, known that this has been the profession. For me, that really wasn't the case. I was never a reader. I always liked to be in my imagination, and I like to write, but I never liked to read. And it really wasn't until, I would say, really when I was 18 or 19, and I started to Charles Bukowski, Post Office, and I started to realize, like, oh, like, there's actually books like this that I can relate to instead of reading, like, you know, The Scarlet Letter or Beowulf in high school or all those, which are great now, and I can actually appreciate those now. But for me, I needed a book that I could relate to before I could get into all of those other books like those I mentioned before. And at that time, when I started reading, I graduated high school, and I was sort of in this interim of, you know, do I go to college? What do I do with my life? And I was never a school person. And so I basically worked for 5 years. I was in real estate. I got my real estate license. I worked at a rehab for 2 years. I worked at a pizza place, hence the inspiration for the book. And then it came to a point where, and I was writing throughout this whole process and reading, and it came to a point where I said to myself, if I want to do this now, I should probably go back. For me, I needed to go back to school for writing because I know I needed that. And so I decided to go back to school in Chicago and finish my BA. And my purpose, my goal there was, you know, I told myself, I want a book by the time I'm out of there. And that was my sole purpose for going back to school. And so that's what I did. And now I have this book.
Well, you know, it's amazing, your story, because there's two ways of tackling life. And one is the traditional way where we burn our faces as they come and they're supposed to come, quote unquote. And mm-hmm. then there's people like you that you just have to go through what you have to go through to know what you want. And I can empathize with that because I'm the same way. So,
yeah.
It sounds a lot familiar to your story, though, on the book. So is this based on your life, or is The Fall to Freedom any inspired on your own experiences? Or
yeah, I would say the foundation, perhaps, is inspired from my life in terms of, you know, the guy, Bix Freeman, the main character, was, you know, a drug dealer slash, like, party guy in high school. Well, that was definitely the case with me, and he ends up working at a pizza place, which I did for two to three years. So in terms of I would say the skeleton of what happened perhaps is inspired by me, but really it took a turn when I named the character Bix, and I had to think, well, why would parents name their kid Bix? And Bix is I got the name from, it's a jazz musician. And so that really changed the course of the book for me, or really the character. And so I made the dad a jazz musician, and so I would say that a lot of the scenes that happen, probably I would say half of them, are just made up, and then the other half may have been inspired from, actual events in my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you grew up then in west side of L.A., right?
Correct.
So how was your experience growing up there, and, how did it affect you as a person?
I think perhaps it made it easier for me to think that anything was possible, when your dad and when your friends' parents are all, in the top, they're the bosses of their industry or their companies. I think it made it easier to say, I'll just do what he's doing. And I think that the problem with that, at least for this was just my case, is that it made it seem too easy. It made it seem like, this is just easy to be the, what our parents are doing. And I think I had this delusion point of view of how to get success and what that means. And so I think that was, so maybe that's a good and a bad thing, because for one, anything was possible, and that's great. On the other hand, it made it seem too easy. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it was, in a way, it was unrealistically easy. I mean, it was, everything is possible, and I know about that, because I grew up from parents that grew up in World War II, and they ended up being very wealthy in Venezuela and all that. So anything is possible. But as I grew up, I didn't think it was easy, because they made sure I knew about their experiences and how difficult life was and all that. But I didn't do the same with my kids. So I know where you're coming from. They were very sheltered, and even though I encouraged them to follow their dreams, I'm realizing now that, they're getting an awakening as they try to do it on their own.
Right.
And I think, it's a good thing that you got that good portion of that experience affect you. Always pursue your dreams. And, life will happen, and you're going to wake up into it anyway. Whether you thought it was easy or not, you will know it's not easy, once you try. So.
Right.
There's something that baffles me a lot, and the character Biz, and I imagine like you, and I imagine many other high school kids, once they're out of high school, and for some reason high school here is very different than what I grew up with, and that's exactly where I could not relate to my kids. Why do you think that the high school culture has such a big effect on the people here in the U.S.? It didn't have that effect to me growing up in South America. I mean, there wasn't really like a high school culture that I go back and think about and I relive in a bad negative way or in a positive way, or it was just part of my life experience. But I see a lot of people, even at my age that I talk to, they are still bringing up from high school in the conversations. And so, Michael, I know that you grew up in the west side of L.A., and I'm just guessing you went to a private school. Why don't you tell us a little bit of your high school experience and how it affected your life later on?
Yeah, so I went to a private school really from kindergarten until 12th grade, where I got kicked out, but I'll mention that later. But I think the grades were, it was 100 people, so for the most part, everyone knew each other. There were still groups where you had the popular kids and the theater kids and all that, but there was no bullying for the most part, and it wasn't really how you see, in the movies or other people's experiences. It was actually interesting because the school was so small, and there's other private schools around this area, we all sort of, it all sort of like meshed into one school in terms of the social life. Like when you went to a party, there would be, okay, the Crossroads kids, the Harvard kids, the Brentwood kids, and there were, those were all in LA, and it was all one sort of big school, if that makes sense. And in terms of how it, it affected me, my personal experience was, for me, since I was bad at school, I never felt that I was at school. I made it a point in middle school, and I remember this, that, okay, well, I'm just going to do what I can do to get by in terms of making my parents happy and getting good grades. And so I got the grades in order to have fun. And that was my MO in high school, was just to have fun because I'm good at that. I like doing that. And so I did everything possible so I could have those, that fun on the weekend. And like that was what I looked forward to most, was the weekend and going to a party and socializing and talking to all those people. How that affected me, I'm not too sure. In terms of, it definitely, I mean, maybe in a positive way, it definitely made it easier for me to socialize, you know, now when I go to events or I go to parties. But it also,
when you're doing your book promotion, maybe your social skills are out there, so.
Yeah, you're right. I think it also, and this is part of what Dick's, the main character, goes through, and this is definitely what I've gone through, was that I've had such this, like, great high school experience. Like, it's interesting. I'll talk to a lot of people now that, you know, I'm 26 years old and I've been out of high school for a while now, and I'll talk to people that went to high school and they're like, oh, I hated my experience. Even they're like, well, how much they hated it. And for me, like, that was really, like, my, like, peak was, like, high school. Yeah, you know, like for me, those memories of high school were amazing, and that's what part of what Dix goes through is he's remembering about how good he had it in high school, and he wants that back. For me, I definitely went through a phase where I definitely had that, where I was like, I wish it, how it was back in, you know, back in the day. I've definitely gotten over that and don't want that lifestyle anymore. But then, so then I, in 12th grade, I got kicked out and went to public school.
Was that a wake up? That's a, like a wake up to reality when you got to public school? Were you, did you expect it to be different? Was it that very different from your previous school?
Yeah, it was, in the sense that, you know, I went from 100 people a grade to, you know, I don't know, probably like four times that. And I didn't really know anyone. I knew maybe about two people at this high school. Not that it was far. I mean, it was really right down the street. But it was completely different atmosphere. You had, you know, kids for the, you had places for the white kids, for the Latinos, for the blacks. And it was more hot. I felt more like it was more hostile, that environment. Not that I was like, you know, I saw people getting beat up every day, and there was nothing like that. But I definitely felt more uncomfortable there, safety-wise. Also, educational-wise, I felt that I was doing, and maybe this could be because it was my, it was the last semester of my senior year, but I felt that I was doing, that they were learning stuff that I was doing 2 years ago. So, and I got all A's, and I didn't do anything.
It's
I literally
funny,
did not.
It's funny what you're telling me right now, because I just did that with my daughter. She's a senior this year, and it's not that she was in trouble in high school. She was going also to a college prep here in Austin, a Catholic school, and she was she's been in Catholic almost all her life in Catholic schools. And I did it mostly not because of the religion, but mostly because of the size of the classrooms. That's why it was our goal was that we thought it would be better for her, you know? And it turned out that I just didn't like who she was becoming in the junior year. It was this entitlement culture that she was getting into her head that I didn't want her to go to college from that little bubble to, you know, whatever she was going to find in college. So I sent her to Florida to public school in my sister's house because her cousin is her same age, and I figured it would be good to have, like, you know, a buddy with mm-hmm. her when she went. And she has all A's now, and she's doing great and everything, but she told me it was a shock, and that she's more receptive to, you know, differences between people, and it was a good move, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
For her. It would have not been a good move for my older one. My older one definitely needed a small environment. So, you know, everybody's different, I think.
Right. I definitely agree with that. I also, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, when I have my kids someday, you know, do I send them, if I have the money, do I send them to private school or do I send them to public school? And I think for me, I didn't take the opportunities that I could have in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when I have kids, or if I do have kids, I would probably send them to public school first. And then, you know, if they really want to, if they're willing to work and at school and they really want it, then, you know, and I can afford it, then let them make that choice. But when you're in it your whole life in private school and you're in it, it's hard to appreciate that. At least that was my case. That's obviously there are kids who are not like that and who take full advantage of what they have.
Yeah, it comes to, you know, personality and genes is what I say.
Yeah.
They have my husband and my genes that were rebels already with no.
Right.
So.
Right.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through Direct Podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Michael Wolfman, author of The Fall to Freedom. Stay tuned because we're going to continue this very interesting and personal conversation with Michael and learn more about the challenges people face fresh out of rehab as they rebuild their life and pursue their newfound goals and dreams. But in the meantime, you can check out his book, The Fall to Freedom, by visiting his website at www.thefalltofreedom.com, and that is thefalltofreedom.com.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does help all of us. You know, we grow up with what surrounds us and everything. But many times we also look up to role models or mentors or even the works of people that are famous or, you know, that are well known for their works, basically. So I know that you had a role model in this way, and it's Frank Lloyd Wright. So I wonder, how did he work inspire you to do what you did now? I mean, to become who you are.
Well, he inspired me in terms of my actual work with how I write, mm-hmm. And really how I structure my stories, and in particular this novel. I had gone to Chicago. I've always loved architecture, but when I went to Chicago, I took a class, and Chicago has great architecture. And I took a class in Chicago architecture, and part of that was we went over Frank Lloyd Wright, and I knew about him, but I didn't know that much about him. And so during this class, we got to go to, there's this part of Chicago called Oak Park, and he has probably about like 10 houses in this one neighborhood. And I really just fell in love with his work. And what I got from his work was I was so intrigued by the fact that I would see his houses that were built, you know, he had a house that was built in 1908, yet it looked like it could be built now. And whereas, you know, most, you can tell for the most part if a house was built, you know, in 1908, it just looks old. You just know that it looks old, but his did not look old. And I wanted to know why was that? And so after studying for a bit, how he designed his houses was, he used this theory called form follows function. And it makes sense. The form of the building follows whatever the function of. So if you're building, you know, a soccer stadium, the function of that is to have like a soccer field where people can play and there's an audience around that can watch it. So you wouldn't build a skyscraper to house a stadium. It kind of makes sense, but it's easier said than done, I guess. And so I wanted to bring that into my own writing. So I would say I had wrote the first draft without that. And then I went back knowing this form follows function idea and applied that to the book. And I said, and basically, you know, I use it as a guide, as how can I form this in terms of the chapters, the parts, and even the sentence structure. How can the form reinforce the function? And so that's why in the book, for instance, I got the idea of So in the book, he has 4 years. He gives himself 4 years to get rich. And throughout the book, there are these timestamps where it says, like, okay, well, he has, you know, 3 years, 9 months. And then, you know, a couple of pages later, or, you know, probably like 50 pages later, it will say, you know, 1 year, 5 months. And then it keeps going down and down and down. And I did that hoping, you know, I'm not sure. Sure if it works, but hoping to get the effect so that the readers will feel the same way that the main character is feeling in terms of his time, how much time he has. Hoping to build that tension. Mm-hmm. So all that was from Frank Lloyd Wright and his theory and his work.
That's very interesting that you're saying that, because a lot of times people think that you go to class in college or your school or whatever, and you're just learning isolated things, you know. So you thought you were probably learning about architecture. Little did you know that you can take architecture principles and apply to writing, and then at the same time, maybe, you know, by showing that architecture principle on how the main character is going through his life, you're even showing how to apply that principle into a life. You know,
so, right.
I mean, there's no limits to what you can learn, and there's no limits on what you can apply to.
I think it just has to deal with what, like for me, I'm a visual learner, and even though, let's say I'll be in writing class and they'll say, you know, this is a good way to do something, X, Y, and Z. For me, it's like hard to see. It's hard to see it until it's like in a picture. And so I think that's why seeing his houses, his principles in a visual, like being able to see it and go through it, his house, and seeing his principles live, it made it easier for me to, like, oh, I get it now, and apply that to my own writing.
I went to your website, and for our listeners, I would like to let them know you got to check Michael's website and read the blog. The website is www.thefalltofreedom.com, and that is thefalltofreedom.com. I've read your blog, your story, actually. It's not even a blog. It's on WordPress, but you can check the link on on Michael's website. I read, Michael, I read Love in White, and I loved it.
Oh, great. Thank you.
It made me feel like I got a snapshot at somebody's heart or feelings for that particular moment. You know what I mean?
It was, yeah.
Like, you have a black and white picture on that, and it has the same feeling as just like capture a moment on somebody's heart. And it was wonderful. So I really, really think that people will love to read your stories as well as your book, and that's why I wanted to mention it.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah, that was, I guess there's this new genre, I don't know if it's new, but a genre called flash fiction, and it's stories under 1,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was, it's hard for me to actually do those. I'm more of like a big idea guy, and I like to, you know, take my time and write novels. So thank you. I've been trying to work on writing those shorter ones. And when it's done right, it's sort of like a poem,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, and it's not easy. I'm horrible at it. You tell me I need to write in a certain amount of words, and it forget it. I'll come up with, an encyclopedia of length type of thing. But so I really loved it because it was short, concise, and it really, really got me into that small moment of a story. And it was really, really, really nice. So I really encourage everybody to visit, again, your website and check it out. And it's www.falltofreedom.com. We're running out of time, but I really want to touch one subject. Most people that have had a drug addiction, especially in high school when they're really young, that I talk to, we talk concentrate about those dark years. I didn't want to do that, but I do want to kind of, there's something that people don't talk about. You know, you say, yeah, I went to rehab, and they think, oh, and that's it, you got well. Well, I think that it is the beginning when you come out of rehab. And so with your story on the book, what would you tell somebody like Bix who find themselves out of rehab and then just parachuting to the same spot, the same environment that got them into trouble in the first place? What would you tell someone that finds themselves in that situation?
That is a very good question. So they're out of rehab.
Mm-hmm. They're out of rehab, and they're convinced that they want a new life, and they really want to work. Excuse me, but they really want to work on it. But you know, everything that surrounds you is pushing you to your old habits. I mean,
yeah.
I went through that not with drugs, fortunately, but I did went through with the cigarette smoking. So,
yeah,
and you know,
tough.
And
yeah.
I stopped, and it makes it even really in my head worse because you know, it's legal, you can get it anywhere and whatever,
right.
You know. And
right.
I stopped many, many years ago. I don't even crave it; it bugs me now. But
yeah.
I always wonder, you know, why people concentrate with the dark years and then they put, like, rehab is done and you're out and you're fine, and it's not true. In my mind, is like when you're out and you go, you know, like with the cigarette was, like I would have coffee with a cigarette. So now when I wanted coffee, automatically I would think about the cigarette.
Right.
And
yeah.
I would imagine that's exactly how it feels when you come out of rehab.
Yeah, well, for me, I had two experiences with that. When I got out of rehab the first time, well, I went to an outpatient,
mm-hmm.
The first time. And when I was done with it, I wasn't, nothing had changed except for me not using drugs and alcohol. Everything else stayed the same. I was hanging out with the same friends. I was going to the same parties. I had sort of, it was the same, I was in the same environment doing the same things. And so eventually I got back into that. And so the second time around, when I got sober, this was 19, I realized if I want this, if I want a different life, I have to do everything differently. And so I had to stop seeing my friends, I had to stop going to parties, and I had to start doing what other people were suggesting.
So you listened.
So yeah, I had to give up my ideas of what I thought were right. In terms of living, I just had to say, okay, you know what? Obviously, my way is not working because it got me to where I am now. So, why don't I ask someone else who seems like they've got their stuff in order? And so that's what I did. And I surround. And it was very hard to do to reach out and ask people, you know, for help, really. And especially at 19, it was hard to find. I wouldn't say it was hard, but it was hard to reach out to other 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds who were in the same position as I was and ask for their help. But I knew that if I didn't, I would go back exactly to where I was, you know, before, which is I knew I didn't want that.
Well, good for you for listening to yourself basically, because we talk about listening to others, yet you listen to yourself enough to listen to yourself telling you you have to do something different, you know? You have to let go of yourself and trust the people that really, really can help you. And so, yeah, well said. Great. Again, thank you so much. This was such an interesting conversation. I can't begin to tell you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, and I related with you, and now I think I understand my daughter a little bit better. So thank you for that. For our listeners, again, is Michael Walsman, author of The Fall to Freedom. Check out his website at www.thefalltofreedom.com and read his blog, especially Love in White. I really like that entry. And check out what writing in limited words can really look like when you do it right. Thank you again, Michael, for being with us.
Thank you.
And to you listeners, thank you again, and until next time.